You, Julie, and I are always here before Larry and Sandy. Huh? Why is that?
The people who are farthest away always arrive early, and the people who are closest to the event.
You have to make it.
I have to come over and say hi to my
friends.
Hi!
How
are
you? At the table.
Maybe somebody will make it happy.
Okay, we could have somebody living in.
I'm sorry.
If you don't have to sit on the stage, then
sit on the stage. Oh, I don't know, too.
Okay, maybe I'll do that. Oh,
center an email. Really out of the way.
The top is one of the top of your
rank, right? Well, call the meeting to order. This is the Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement, our meeting for May 11th, 2011, and we have a quorum. We have a number of bills on our agenda this evening, and we had tentatively scheduled a meeting for tomorrow night, but because of the press of other legislative business, including trying to wrap up conference committee activity, we're not going to be able to meet. And members, we had tentatively talked about looking and acting on an omnibus, mini-omnibus bill here on Monday, and we're suggesting maybe we try to do that this evening to avoid having to have another meeting on Monday. If there's a problem with that, we'll have to schedule a meeting Monday, but I know both the House and the Senate will be meeting day and night next week, I presume. And so I just want to alert you to that, and we can talk about that as we go along. The first bill up, let's first take care of the minutes. Would someone move the minutes from our meeting of May 5th? Moved by Senator Rosen. Any additions or corrections to those minutes? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. The minutes are approved. The first bill on the agenda is House File 409. Representative Poppy. Welcome to the commission.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And commission members, this is House File 409. I will have different people come forward to testify on behalf of this bill if it's needed. I certainly have the first person, who is Gary Janikowski from Minsky, who is going to testify about this. This is a bill. The reason behind it in some ways was because last year I brought a personal bill before the Pension Commission regarding a woman who had fallen into this situation, and we're trying to fix it by bringing forth some language regarding the default position for people who are going receiving their retirement accounts. So I'll let Mr. Janikowski talk about it, or I can describe it more fully if you'd like.
Okay, Mr. Janikowski, please identify yourself for the record, and you may proceed.
Sure. Gary Janikowski. I'm System Director of Personnel with Minsky, and we are supportive of this proposal. I think Mr. Burek has done a really fine job of outlining what the issues are in the memo. We don't have a lot of individual bills that come before the commission, but when we do, they tend to be this very issue, individuals who had served some prior time in a defined benefit plan, most likely TRA, but could also be one of the other states' defined benefit plans. And they somehow, when they start employment, they have up to 1 year to elect to move now into the defined benefit plan. Many of them, some of them, neglect to do that. And if it's outside that 1 year window, we cannot put them back into that plan. And that's when we see these individual bills come before the commission. And what this bill would do would require that instead of placing any new participant automatically in the IRAP or the defined contribution plan, as this is the case with currently, that if they had some prior service with the defined benefit plan in the state of Minnesota, that the default for them would instead be TRA, and then they would have up to 1 year to elect to move out of TRA and into the defined contribution plan, or IRAP, if they so chose. Again, we haven't had a lot of activity on this, but when we do, this is the kind of thing that happens. Sometimes the error will occur also at a campus, and a campus provides bad advice or bad counseling. And I think some of what's in here would also help direct our efforts with campuses as well.
Questions for Mr. Janikowski?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you. Is there anyone in particular at this time that this is a problem for?
We have an individual bill that is not on the agenda this evening, I don't believe, but we've got a good example of this. We've got an individual who had employment at four or five different metro area schools and was not providing every... Each institution thought the other had provided her with a notice in the counseling, and they had not. And if we had known that at the time when she began employment, it would have fixed the problem. She had prior TRA service.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So instead of just dealing this with this one individual, you're coming forward with something that's more of a general approach. Is that correct?
That's correct,
Mr. Janikowski.
Kiffmeyer and Mr. Chair. This particular proposal in front of you would deal with that issue as well as any others that should happen in the future with similar circumstances.
Okay, Mr.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think when it's dealing with one person, I am my only concern here is the unintended consequences and what this opens up. So, Mr. Chairman, are we laying this over for possible inclusion? Is that the possibility?
Yes, that would be. And perhaps you should have Mr. Burrick go through and give his analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Burrick?
Mr. Chair and members, let me make a few statements regarding this. The first is on the summary, the very first page. Under the specific proposed changes, the first one says revise the default coverage to TRA rather than IRAP for any new MNSCU employees if the employee is vested in a plan, including the combined service annuity. That's an error. It should be any if the employee has any service at all in a plan covering the combined service annuity. So I wanted to correct that error. The bill has been well summarized. There isn't really that much to it. Some of the policy issues I mentioned on page 2 and 3 of my memo. Some of the issues relate to this requirement that is in the... another thing I should mention. It's my understanding that the author wants to hear this in the form of a delete all amendment to the original bill, the delete all amendment being the -6A amendment. Regarding issues, let me mention that there is a provision in the bill requiring MNSCU, or in the delete all, requiring MNSCU to provide the employee no later than 90 days before the end of any coverage election period information about the various coverage options that the individual has. There are some issues relating to that. In these elections, the employee generally has 1 year to make an election. So the language as stated in this draft then would leave up to 3/4 of a year for the employee to possibly venture out on his or her own and perhaps without much thought or input, make an election that they later regret. So one issue is perhaps the commission would like to consider some period other than 90 days before the end of the election period, perhaps 180 days, to make it less likely, provide less of a time period where the employee could perhaps venture off on their own. If the commission feels that general issue is worth pursuing, though there are other ways to address it. It could, frankly, be addressed administratively without any language in law by having MNSCU ensure that in any forms that they have where the individual would elect coverage, that the employee would certify that he or she has, in fact, received materials from the applicable plans, reviewed them, understands them, and is aware of the action that they are doing. Another alternative is to amend the lead all by putting some language in law requiring that sort of a certification statement be added. Beyond that, I don't really have any further comments. I stand for any questions anyone has.
Representative Poppe, does the 6A delete all incorporate all of the amendments that were potential amendments to this bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The 6A is the delete everything that I'm proposing that mm-hmm. I'd like to see as the bill. I believe the other amendments are potential amendments that maybe the commission would consider, if I understand correctly,
right.
From Mr. Burrick.
Okay. Mr. Burrick?
Mr. Chair, members, none of the other amendments are essential. So if you don't wish to consider them, there's no reason to.
Questions from the commission. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Jankowski.
Representative Murphy, would you use your mic, please? Thank you.
I forget. Mr. Jankowski, Mr. Chair, does 6A meet the needs that you have perceived?
Mr. Jankowski?
Representative Murphy, commission members, Mr. Chair. Yes, it does. We do provide training and individual invitations to webinars to all new people. Twice a year they get a personal invitation, and so the educational opportunities are there. I don't personally have a preference as to what number of days are out there because we do try to hit that piece hard.
Okay.
Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Jankowski, is this going forward? This doesn't take care of the employees that are still upset that they can't get back in DRA?
Representative
Jankowski,
Mr. Chair, it does not take care of that issue that has long surfaced with regard to full-time employees or people who are not new to the institution.
Mr. Jankowski, so that's still yet to come?
That is correct.
But this is for new hires and people going forward.
That is correct.
Or people that haven't decided when they're going to retire yet.
Mr. Jankowski?
Representative Murphy, Mr. Chair, that is correct. This would only provide that this opportunity for new employees to the system who become newly eligible for the retirement plan.
Okay.
Further question?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Close enough. Mr. Jankowski, I see there's an amendment for the 90 days. Is 90 days sufficient, or is there any other reason to entertain anything beyond or below 90 days?
Mr. Jankowski.
Senator Rosen, Mr. Chair, I think that is fine with us. We try to hit this really hard early on in the process, but what typically happens with new faculty is we give them the material, and they're very busy getting ready for their classes, so they don't tend to spend a lot of attention or pay a lot of attention to it, and they kind of put it aside. Then about a month or two into the semester, we send them the invitations to the webinar and explain a little bit more about what this election is about and encourage them to attend a webinar.
Further questions?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the things is there is a difference in both the employee and employer contribution rates, whether you are TRA or the IRAP. And if you do some of these elections and some of these things, how does that impact things? Because it's a fairly significant difference, and especially when you accumulate the compounding and all of that, and just being fair to all the other employees who have been contributing at that higher amount, how does this affect, if you elect to do this, how does this affect that contribution rate? Is there a makeup difference or something so that they can be on par with the other employees who had paid in from the beginning at that different percentage?
Mr. Jankowski.
Representative Kiffmeyer, Mr. Chair, it is a prospective election, so that if they should decide to do this election, say 10 months into that first year, it doesn't go back. They keep whatever they had, and then they go forward with the new plan. And if I may, there are major differences between defined benefit and defined contribution plans, and I don't know if Mr. Burek would care to opine on that, but it's different in how they operate. The defined contribution plan is like a cash plan. You control the investment. You get the employer and the employee contributions plus growth, hopefully, whereas with TRA, it's a pension, and it's based on a formula rather than how much is in the account.
Representative Kipmar.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The reason why I understand for you in that first year, but if I recall right, does not your language also allow them going back? I mean, from what I recall in reading the bill, and again, not quite sure maybe if that was the intention here in 409, but it seems as though what I recall right, though, is that if you had sufficient service credit in one or more plans, so this implies that this is more than a year, as you were talking about, in, say, their first year of employment. So it sounds like it may be on a go-back basis as well. Am I misreading that, or?
Representative Janikowski.
Kiffmeyer and Mr. Chair, it simply has to do with when you become eligible for our plan, if you had prior service, mm-hmm. most likely in the defined benefit plan in the state of Minnesota, most likely that's a better choice for you because you're closer to being vested with a defined benefit plan. And so that, in many cases, is the likely choice that they should be making. Not in all cases, but in some cases. So it has to do more with what your history, your work history is with the state of Minnesota than it does with anything else.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Kipmar.
It's not a matter. I understand the benefit to the employee. That wasn't it. It was a matter of the issue of contributions, percentage rate, okay? So that if they are doing so, but what I'm hearing you say is that if they had prior year's service on a defined benefit plan, they would have been contributing at that rate at that time, and that would still be there and operative. I think that may clarify it.
Mr. Janikowski.
Representative Kiffmeyer. Mr. Chair, yes, that is correct.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Poppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to... I think Mr. Janikowski has presented the information correctly. I just wanted to mention one of the issues for the person would be that they do default to the defined benefit rather than to the IRAP if they were in the defined benefit. So, and that actually I think is less of an issue because they then be able to continue their defined benefit where otherwise they may have a gap. And that's where they've had some issues. That's where I think, for my circumstance with the person in my district from last time that had the issue, was because she had a period of time that she didn't realize she wasn't in a defined benefit plan, and that was the issue. If that didn't clarify it, probably, but that's really the reason why I was interested in trying to correct it on a grander scale, just because of the situation that she was in, and I'd heard that other people had also had the same kind of situation.
Further questions from the commission? Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, are we going to hear from TRA?
Yes. Yes. Mr. Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Luther Thompson, representing TRA. This is something that we've kind of been advocating for some time with MNSCU. It really is about the people that have prior allowable service, putting them in the plan, defaulting them into the plan that makes the most sense when they're first hired at MNSCU. And it is prospective, July 1 of 2011. So that if you have allowable service, and you're hired on July 1, 2011 or later, you will be defaulted. If you certify that you have allowable service, you will be defaulted into the plan you already have. You still have the choice to elect IRAP if you so choose. But in almost all of these cases, anyone would advise the member with the prior service to probably stay to elect a defined benefit plan. This has been a problem because if, in fact, you defaulted to the IRAP, and they have 1 year to choose. What has happened in the past is that they don't choose until 9 or 10 months into the first year. Then they elect, and now they've got a break in their service. So 10 months stays in IRAP, and they have prospective service only in TRA. This doesn't solve the issue where all of those current members that might have been inadequately counseled ended up perhaps in IRAP and not in TRA. We do have one of those, as Representative Poppe has stated. And there also is a provision in here. It was in the law before, as Representative Kiffmeyer said, is that if once you get a newly tenured person within MNSCU, you can make an election then to go into TRA. But in that case, you have to pay the full actuarial cost and buy back all of the service to make TRA whole. So, I mean, we support this language. We think it makes sense for those members, particularly for the people that have, I think, are in the 2-year training programs.
Mr. Thompson, would any of the other amendments be advisable in your view?
No, I guess we would oppose certainly 10A because we specifically objected to the language of vested rather than allowable service. The 9A1 is one of those where the employee has to certify that he or she received the materials. This seems to have been, in the past where we've had individual member bills, the members come back and said, I didn't get the materials, I wasn't counseled. That's certainly up to you. The 90 days, I agree it shouldn't be, right after you're hired, but it said you had to have the counseling from 90 days to the end of the election period. Perhaps it should be sooner than that. I don't know. That's strictly, I think, an issue for the employers. They said they were okay with it. If it doesn't work, we'll make it. We can try to change it a year from now to 180 days.
Thank you. Further questions from the commission? Senator Rosen.
No further questions. I would like to move the 6A, delete all amendment.
Senator Rosen moves the 6A, delete all amendment. Further discussion. And that's to be incorporated into our omnibus bill, correct?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
I just wanted to know, does this include the employee notice sign that they've received, such as, I think it was 9A? Pardon? That's not it. This is fairly...
Representative Kiffmeyer, that would need to be amended.
That's another one? It's not in here.
Senator Rosen, that's not in your motion at
no,
this point?
No, no.
So if you wish to do that, we would need to amend the motion.
You want to pass the room? You have to what doesn't matter? I would like to make, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make that 9A amendment motion for Representative Kiffmeyer. When do you do it, now or after?
Well, it would seem to me if we wish to amend the motion that's before us, now would be the time to do that. So you're moving the 9A amendment? Discussion to the 9A amendment. And again, Mr. Thompson, you're supportive of that? The 9A amendment?
I mean, it seems to make sense. If in fact you're going to hold, MNSCU is going to be held harmless if the person makes the wrong election, at least. I think you would want the person to have made some documentation that, yes, I in fact did receive the materials. Otherwise, you're going to have this issue, perhaps coming up again as we do in individual member bills, saying I wasn't counseled, I didn't get the materials. I think it helps close that loop.
Okay, the motion is to amend the delete all with the 9A amendment. All in favor of that signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. You now have before you the delete all as amended.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Kahn.
If we don't put the A on, then it's 90 days.
That's my understanding, Representative Kahn.
I think that seems to me that it's enough. I mean, I don't think until the end of
time is a good idea.
Okay.
Yes.
Mr. Burrick, do you want to comment again? I don't think Representative Kahn was here when you mentioned that.
Oh, yes, I was.
Members, this amendment would be an amendment to the to the 6A amendment on page 1 to the notification requirement. Generally, these elections in IRAP, the individual has 1 year to do it.
Yeah.
So as the 6A amendment reads right now, Minsky would have to make sure the individual is counseled 90 days before the end of that period, which would leave roughly three-quarters of a year before then where the individual could take action on their own, perhaps with a lack of information. So the issue that you're trying to address is that 90 days. Should it be a longer period? If you had a number greater than 90, that would require Minsky to give notice and counseling earlier.
Representative Kahn.
I think the 90 is fine.
And Mr. Janikowski, again, to confirm, you said that Minsky was willing to take that responsibility.
Mr. Chair, we are fine with that.
Okay. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Janikowski, on that point, then how many webinars would they have been invited to watch and receive the materials once and then two invitations?
Mr. Janikowski.
Representative Murphy, Mr. Chair. That is correct. When they begin employment and they become eligible for the plan, we provide them with the materials and explain the election process, and we tell them that they will be invited to a webinar at the end of the semester that they begin employment. And then if we don't and that's recorded, by the way, so that's available out on the website. We have maybe 600-700 people every year who are new to the plan, and we run that at the end, shortly after the start of each semester. We do it jointly with TRA.
Okay. So
twice is the answer.
So, Mr. Chair, they've had at least two opportunities then in that time period, so 90 days would be sufficient.
Right.
Mr. Janikowski.
That is correct.
Okay, further discussion on the delete all amendment as amended. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Representative Poppe and Mr. Janikowski.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
The next bill is House File 1354. Senate File 1088. Representative Lesh. And
excuse me, Mr. Chair. I didn't quite hear. Was the motion to lay it over for possible inclusion? Was that?
We did not make a motion for that, actually.
So maybe we need that
we
motion.
We just adopted the amendment. But
oh, I'm sorry. I thought. Okay, I'm sorry. We need the motion to.
I'll make that motion then.
All right. Senator Pappas moves that we lay over House File 409 as amended. For possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. The motion is passed, is adopted. Senator Pappas, Representative
Lesh. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Senate File 1088 is a continuation of last year's reform for the St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund Association. What we are doing in this bill, like we did last year with the other big funds, is we're increasing contribution rates, we're reducing benefits in order to improve fiscal stability, and we're producing long-term savings of between $18 and $19 million. And I'll let Mr. Burrick explain the details on how we're doing that.
Mr. Burrick.
Members, there is nothing on contribution rates in this particular bill. I believe that was part of legislation passed last year, although it may only now be starting to phase in. What the bill does is summarized on the first page of the memo for you there. The first thing it's doing is it's revising post-retirement increase procedures for the St. Paul teachers. If no action is taken, and members who have been on the commission for a few years likely recall that there have been quite a few changes in the post-retirement adjustment procedures for this fund in the last few years. These were viewed as short-term studies or experiments which phased out. And if no action is taken this year, what the general law would be is that there will be a 2% annual post-retirement increase for this fund. So now what the bill does regarding post-retirement increase is, rather than that automatic 2% increase, there will be a 1% increase paid until the pension fund is 80% funded based on actuarial value. And then there will be a 2% increase when that ratio is between 80% and 90%. Once 90% is hit, they would then transition into an inflation match procedure where the adjustment would match inflation up to 5%. The bill also reduces the refund interest rate. This is identical to changes that were made last year in refund interest rates for TRA, for the MSRS plans and the PARA plans. It reduces deferred annuity augmentation. This is also comparable to what occurred last year in the MSRS plans, PARA plans, and TRA. PARA's reductions are actually a little more substantial than this, but many of the plans last year had this type of a change in their legislation. It eliminates interest on the reemployed annuitant savings accounts for reemployed annuitants from the St. Paul teachers. Again, this type of change was made last year for the MSRS, TRA, and PERA plans. And the final thing of any substance here is it repeals the current post-retirement adjustment procedure because the new procedure would be established by this first item that I mentioned. Do you want me to get into policy issues with this now? Or?
Well, let's see what the commission wishes. Mr. Burke, from what you've said, that this action is consistent with what was done last year. Are there any differences, significant differences, in what was done with other funds?
Mr. Chairman, it's a hard question to answer precisely because, for instance, with deferred annuity augmentation, the reductions, last year there were reductions in many of the plans. The reductions were not consistent across those plans. MSRS, TRA, and the PARA plans did reduce deferred annuity augmentation. They didn't do it the same way. What we have in this case is St. Paul teachers now asking to reduce deferred annuity augmentation. It's similar to the way some of the plans did it last year. It's not quite the same as what PRA did, but it is broadly similar in that it is a call for a reduction. Similarly, with the post-retirement adjustment procedures, many plans last session requested a decrease in those post-retirement adjustments, and it did pass into law. Those adjustments, however, were not consistent across all those plans. For instance, TRA for 2011 and 2012 would have no increase under the provisions that passed last year, and then I believe it's a 2% increase after that. MSRS was different. I believe they were 2% in all years, including 2011-2012. In PRA, the reductions were more significant. I believe it's 1% going forward in PRA. So while, again, it's similar to what happened last year, and it is a call for a reduction to trim liabilities, what happened last year wasn't uniform, and what's happening this year is not uniform. Some of the issues that I raised in the memo regarding this post-retirement adjustment reduction, for instance, I pointed out to you that we have these differences, and to the extent that the commission is concerned that we would, if this were to pass, we would have three different procedures for doing post-retirement adjustments depending upon whether the individual is covered by TRA or covered by Duluth teachers or covered by St. Paul teachers. Now, the commission might want to consider some amendments to make them more uniform. And I have some amendments to do that if you wish to pursue it. I would warn you, though, that it has liability implications if you were to do that.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Just on that point, one of the complications is the St. Paul teachers, for example, I believe for the last 2 years had only had a 0% increase in the COLA and is looking at a 1% increase now, whereas the other plans had a different system. So if we were required to go to 0%, it would kind of be unfair because we are at 0% for the last 2 years. So I think if you're going to try to do any uniformity, you have to kind of phase it in into at some point in the future.
Mr. Burr.
Mr. Chairman, members, I would have to agree with Senator Pappas that the immediate need is probably to trim liabilities. What happened last year caused considerable departures from uniformity, but certainly the Commission's highest priority should not be at this point to reestablish uniformity. It should be to trim liabilities. But as Senator Pappas said, sometime in the future there may be a need to, when these plans recover more fully, there may be a need to review some of these provisions to reestablish some more consistency across the plans.
So potentially an item that we should include on our consideration list for next year would be that issue of uniformity.
Mr. Chairman, members, next year or later, next year might be a little too early.
Okay.
Well, we'll have to see just if there's a miraculous recovery in these plans. Maybe it'd be time to consider it, but otherwise it might need to be delayed further.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to point out in terms of distinguishing this from the other funds, too, the state auditor has said that this fund has received the best return of any of the funds over the course of the past 10 years. We have the lowest administrative expenses and have the lowest benefit increases, too. Generally, for those members that are wondering, the total number, it removes $112 million of liability. But it is distinguished from those other funds, and I want to point that out. I also wanted to introduce Paul Doan, who is here representing the fund, who can answer some of the more detailed questions also.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
What bothers me about, first of all, these three funds are very different, and uniformity is an extremely difficult situation with these three. But what bothers me more than anything is the fact that even at best, TRA is 78% funded on an actuarial basis, 68% on market value. St. Paul's 68% based on actuarial value, 55% on market value. And the deficiency for TRA is 4% on actuarial value, and St. Paul Teachers is 4.2%. And so, and not only that, this rolling 25-year amortization period. And so there are just numerous ones here that are that are issues here, and I don't know if this is a worthy temporary fix or helpful. I think any time you reduce, you know, benefits, you're going to help the funds overall as you go forward. But maybe I think the question I would have for our staff is what happens, say, some of this language were here and we did some of these reductions and some of these benefits. What would that do to some of these actuarial numbers?
Mr. Burke?
Or is that already included?
Mr. Chairman, members, there's information on the impact that these changes would have on St. Paul teachers. That's on page 6 and 7 of the staff memo. You looked at the, there's a chart there, which I tried to summarize the information that was provided to us by the St. Paul Teachers Actuary. And what the actuary did was started with the St. Paul Teachers Actuarial Summary as it presents itself for July 1, 2010, and then the actuary determined how these would change with some of the reductions, benefit reductions that were that are proposed in this bill. The actuary, however, lumped a few of them together, so we can't always isolate particular changes. But if you look at the very last line of the chart, which would be near the top of page 7, the contribution deficiency in the actuarial work for St. Paul teachers, the formal actuarial report for July 1, the deficiency is 4.24% of payroll. The next column over shows the change in that deficiency due to 4% interest on refunds rather than 6% as in current law, and due to a move to 2% deferred annuities augmentation rather than 3% up to age 55, 5% thereafter. And those two effects reduce the deficiency by 0.34% of payroll. The largest change by far, the largest driver here in terms of a cost savings, is the move to this new post-retirement adjustment procedure. The last column from the end shows that would reduce the deficiency by over 3% of payroll. So that post-retirement adjustment is a large driver in these reductions. And the following column, the last one over, shows the end result of all these changes. So you'd start with a 4.24% deficiency, and if all these changes were adopted, the actuary is suggesting that the deficiency would be reduced considerably, way down to 0.84% of payroll.
Mr. Doan, please identify yourself for the record.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is Paul Doan. I'm the Executive Director of the St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund Association. I just wanted to clarify one point for the committee's edification here, and that is one typo. Actually, Mr. Burek referenced it here to the end, but the accrued liability, and to respond to Representative Kipmeyer's comment, the reduction in the accrued liability is a result of these steps. If you look at the fourth column under funded status on the page 6, change from 2% to 1% will actually reduce the unfunded liability over the 25-year projected period. It should be $103 million, not $103,000. The benefit of this legislation has been said by both members of the legislature here to my left, Senator Pappas and Representative Lesch, will realize significant savings either in terms of the contribution rates that were passed by this body last year and those increases, but also by the cost savings that are built into this program. Over the life of this proposal, we will reduce the unfunded liability from the COLA by over $100 million. And as a result of the changes in the lowered augmentation and lowered refund interest, lower the contribution, lower the unfunded liability by $7 million over the life of this proposal. So it's a significant contribution that this piece of legislation will make. And as the chairman had mentioned earlier, without the legislation, we will be at a 2% COLA level, and this really is an important change that hopefully the legislature will, your commission will consider favorably acting upon. And if there's a desire to look at more in-depth policy issues in the future, we're more than happy to be a party to those conversations. But the immediate issue here is to try to companion the bill that was passed last year where there was an increase in contribution rates, and in this bill, which is a reduction in costs of operating the system. And the two in concert come very close to meeting the unfunded liability. And hopefully, if the market continues on the course that it's on, we will realize, I noticed the returns for the fiscal year to date are in the 15% category, so that only further helps the accrued or unfunded liability.
Mr. Doan, let's just hope that that trend continues. And
I agree, Mr.
But I don't think I want to hold my breath on that. Senator Daley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In light of the legal challenges to the legislation passed last year, should we consider that as we're considering this? Do we need to factor that in?
Good question, Senator Daley. Mr. Martin, do you want to weigh in on that? Or
members, there was litigation. The litigation is against the statewide retirement plans. There was not, to my knowledge, been a challenge to the Duluth teachers plan. For whatever reason, the plaintiffs have only pursued the statewide plans. But the issue would be the same, that a post-retirement increase that was at a certain stated rate was modified adversely to the recipients. My understanding is that the ruling from the Ramsey County District Court on the motion to dismiss by the defendants and the motion for a directed verdict by the plaintiffs will be made shortly, sometime this month. Presumably then the losing party will appeal, and it would be presumably next spring before we would know fully what the Court of Appeals' view of Minnesota state law on point will be. But it would be inviting the same sort of litigation for this pension plan should there be plaintiffs in the waiting.
Further questions from the commission? Senator Rosen.
Mr. Chair, a question for Mr. Burke. Just out of curiosity, if we were going to start some uniformity, what would we start with first? So you said it had to be graduated. What would or gradual uniformity? What would be the first thing that we should look at?
Mr. Burke.
Members, that's a very hard question.
Amortization, the 25 year.
Some of these benefits you could make.
This
more.
Is called stump the staff.
Well, some of these benefits you could make more uniform. Without having too much of a negative cost impact on the plans. I think the one that would be trickiest to achieve uniformity on, given the cost implications, is probably the post-retirement adjustments. That's where the biggest liability seems to be.
Further questions?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think that is a really...
Kipmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that is a really valid question, and it's more of a long-range plan. But sometimes you can put those, just as we did last year, there was, their benefits are reduced for a certain period of time. I mean, I think we could have make a request that the staff you know, maybe make a recommendation to us and give us kind of a what would be the plan. Now, I think the question is for them is going to be, well, where do you want, you know, do you want just uniformity, or do we want to bring all the plans together in one way so that when you're dealing with teachers in this situation, no matter where they are, they're all dealt the same. And those are two different approaches. One is keeping them separate but making them similar in policy. The other one is having a way for them to all come in together, and I think we would need to make somewhat of a decision and then ask the staff, or we can ask them to give us two scenarios. You know, if we did it uniformity, or if we did it, we all put them into one, whatever the bigger one is. And I would say it would also be up to the members to weigh in regards to that as to maybe how they would prefer. But, you know, anytime you have multiples like this, it just gets to be always more complicated.
Well, Representative Kiffmeyer, we'll keep this on a running list of things that we can address later, but obviously that's beyond the scope of our discussion on this bill tonight, but good question. Senator Pappas, what is the motion that you...
Mr. Chairman, I would, if there are no further questions from the members, then I would just move that House File 1354, Senate File 1088, be laid over for consideration, the omnibus bill.
And are there any of these amendments that you wish to have put on the bill?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Further question? Senator Daley.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if it's a question, but certainly a comment. This is most likely headed to the courts. If the past is any indication, it's going to be challenged. I don't know how much it costs and who bears that cost for the litigation.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Pappas?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Daley, the fund has not given out a COLA for the last 2 years. It was at zero, and this bill provides for a 1% COLA. So I think if the fund was going to be sued, they would have been sued, correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Doan, they would have been sued over the last 2 years because of the lack of a COLA, especially compared to the other funds that were still giving out a COLA. So I guess that's my very uneducated opinion, is I would think it would be very unlikely.
Okay, thank you.
Further question? If not, all in favor of the motion to lay this bill over for possible inclusion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Representative Lesch and Senator Pappas. Representative Murphy, you have two bills. We'll take one at a time. The first bill is House File 1628. And is there a Senate file number on this yet?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Just checking. Representative Murphy.
I have them in my office, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, House File 1628 is the bill that would bring the Duluth Teachers Duluth Teachers Retirement Plan into compliance with the 2010 legislation that was passed. Mr. Jay Stoffel is here to talk about the details.
Mr. Stoffel, welcome. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jay Stoffel. I'm the Executive Director of Duluth Teachers Retirement Fund. First, a little bit of background. Last year, during the session, we made several changes similar with the statewide plans. We reduced our cost of living adjustment, temporarily suspending it until we reach 80% funded. We changed... We increased contribution rates. First one is going to be going into effect July 1 of this year for both the employees and the employer, and then another increase 1 year from that point on July 1, 2012. And some other changes. One thing that was included last year was a change of vesting from 3 years to 5 years, but we did that with all the changes that took place. I'll take the responsibility. I failed to look at all the places where we have vesting mentioned in our statutes. So when we changed vesting last year, we only did it for retirement benefits. The bill this year, House File 1628, will change the vesting so that we go from 3 years to 5 years, like we did with retirement benefits last year, but it will also happen for an unreduced benefit, people who retire early and take a retire early and take a reduced benefit. It will also apply to survivor benefits and disability benefits. And then there's one leave provision, something we call qualified part-time leave, that also requires currently a three-year eligibility. We want to take all of those things to 5 years so they're consistent with what we did last year for retirement benefits. So from an administrative point, what I'm doing right now is administering a plan with 5-year vesting for retirement benefits, but 3-year vesting for lots of other things. This is actually a reduction of liability, but it's so minuscule. Last year's change was 0.1%. So this is a fraction of that number. So I really didn't come here with any cost number, any savings number, because it's so minuscule. Really looking at this from an administrative point of view to make vesting consistent at 5 years across the board.
So rare instance. Questions for Representative Murphy or Mr. Stoffel? Mr. Burrick, would you?
Members, one thing I would make a comment on is the change in the vesting requirement, if we want to call it that, for this qualified part-time teacher program. Under this bill, for Duluth teachers, you would have to have at least 5 years of service in order to use that provision. It's not really a retirement benefit. It's a leave provision. It's a somewhat different animal. This qualified part-time teacher provision, it's in law for Duluth teachers, St. Paul teachers. There's comparable language in TRA. None of the other plans have changed the number of years needed in order to take part in that program. It's left at 3 years. So I'm unclear as to why Duluth Teachers wants to change that one to 5. I really just don't understand the logic behind it.
Mr. Stoffel?
Mr. Chairman, simple answer, just administrative consistency, ease of administering the plan, just have across the board five-year vesting. Part-time people, what this does is allows a person who works at least 26% time, but no more than 80% time. So that's the definition of part-time. That's the kind of a person that it would possibly use this provision in this program. It allows them to pay into the pension fund as if they were working full-time. So they are paying on their part-time work through payroll deduction, but then they would write us a check for the rest of the part-time that they're not working to bring their service credit up to a full rate in their high five average salary or their salary for that year up to a full rate of salary. Whether we keep that at 3 or 5, I honestly could live with either one if we get all of this but that one. But I'm really just here to argue for sake of administrative ease to make it all 5 years. I don't know if there's a real strong argument either way to keep this one at 3 or 5, but I'm just making the argument from an administrative point of view.
Mr. Burrick, follow up?
I would just mention that if you did want to leave it at 3 years, the -1A amendment would do that. It would leave the part-time qualified teacher program with a 3-year service requirement if you chose to use it.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just wondering, Representative Murphy, if the membership is supporting this, how would they feel about going to 5 years across the board?
Mr. Chair, this was passed by the board.
It was passed by the board. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I move that House File 1628 be included in the omnibus bill.
Okay. Representative Murphy, there are no amendments that you're recommending?
No.
Representative Kahn.
I actually like the idea, despite the administrative ease, I kind of like the idea of all the plans being the same. You are, by making this 5 instead of 3, you are taking some benefit away from the members, in a sense. They have to work 2 more before they can either take this leave, and if none of the other plans have seen fit to do it, I'm not quite so sure that this is a good idea, unless we've heard that the members have heard of it and they don't object. No one else thinks this?
Mr. Stoffel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, I agree, but the point of last year's bill was a big reduction in benefits. We reduced interest rates. We reduced cost of living adjustments. I guess what our board was thinking of in changing vesting when we changed it for retirement benefits was it's kind of a share the pain program from all parties. It's the retired folks. It's the newly hired teachers. It's the people who are taking refunds. It's everybody across the board. It was a big, it was a reduction in benefits. But again, I can live with 3 years if you really have a strong preference to keep it at 3.
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, it just makes more sense to have, this isn't really a retirement benefit. This is something that's slightly, somewhat different, and it seems to me if the other plans have 3, I don't know why you would want to have this one at 5.
Well, Representative Kahn, they're requesting it. Apparently, their membership has signed off on it.
Well, no, they haven't.
Yeah.
Oh, the membership has?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. So that should be a reason right there, I would think.
I thought to the question of what the membership thinks of it, the answer was that it was just a proposal from the board.
Okay.
All right.
Further discussion on the motion. The motion is that House File 1628 be laid over for possible inclusion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Thank you, Representative Murphy, and you may move to 1668. And could we have one of the research staff, Representative Morrow, we told him that we would... Oh, he's in the back. No need to call you, I guess. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the House File 1668 be included for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair, members, the House File 1668 is a bill that gives options to the City of Duluth in a circumstance that has to be addressed in the future, and the future starts tomorrow. And Ms. Vanek from PERA is here to give background information.
Ms. Vanek.
Mr. Chair, members, Mary Vanek, PERA Director. In 2008, the City of Duluth reported to us that they had been including an employer contribution to deferred compensation and an employer contribution toward the difference in insurance costs between single and family in salary reported to PERA, and this had been going on for many years. It started in 1995, but it was thereafter that our law was modified and said that any employer-paid fringe benefit is not to be included as salary for para purposes. So when we were notified of this, we started working with the city and collected information and calculated the contributions reported in error and the benefits paid that had been overpaid because this was included in the salary that was used in the calculation. So we worked with Representative Murphy and the members of the commission in 2009 to propose some modifications that could be used as an option to the local government employers involved because it wasn't just the City of Duluth. It was the City of Duluth, Duluth Airport Authority, the Western Lake Superior Sanitary District, City of Bacchus, and City of Virginia. And they're all, in the same region of the state, so we're assuming there was an exchange of information and this practice was undertaken. The City of Duluth Let me back up. The City of Virginia, Western Lake Sanitary District, Superior Sanitary District, and City of Bacchus all adopted under the special law enacted in 2009 through local government approval the use of the three-year statute of limitations. That's repeated in this bill. The City of Duluth and the Duluth Airport Authority, for whom the city is fiscal agent, did not take any action because retirees affected by this appealed the staff decision that this was not salary. And it has taken until January of this year for the administrative law judge to issue a recommendation to our Board of Trustees. Our staff attorney and the attorney representing the petitioners filed exceptions to that judge's decision, and it was not until last month's board meeting that the board actually heard the appeal and took testimony from those who chose to come and present their view to them. Because of the complexity of this case, the board is deciding tomorrow. They took the month between the April meeting and the May meeting to look at all the record, and tomorrow they will publicly deliberate and make a decision. The reason that we asked Representative Murphy to reintroduce these two provisions is because when they were enacted in 2009, they were enacted under the provision of local approval. And that local approval section of statute says that if not acted upon before the start of the next biennial session, they automatically expire. And since this decision, there's not a decision yet because of the appeal, and the city didn't have an opportunity to act on these options, we have asked for them to be reinstated so that when there is a decision, we hope within this year, the city will at least have these as options if they so choose to exercise them to resolve the issue with the members affected.
So, Ms. Vanek, PERA has really requested that this action be taken.
We believe, yes, and I spoke to the city administrator, mm-hmm. and it's simply as Representative Murphy indicated, it puts options on the table. That it's a, there are two different ways of resolving the overpayments.
Questions from the commission. Mr. Burick.
Mr. Chairman, members, one of my the policy points that I raised about this is the need for information about the options. Regarding the special legislation proposal that's before you, that's summarized in the memo. What's not clear to me, and I'm sure isn't clear to the commission, is if the commission and legislature were to not act on this special legislation, what treatment would apply? I think if the commission were provided with that information, they would have a better sense of what the difference is between the general law treatment and this special law treatment. And one reason I had trouble with this was the attachment that was provided when this was discussed in 2009, and that appears in this memo right after memo packet right after my memo. It's the document says on the top from para February 25th, 2009, and down in that page it says the board took the position that the statute of limitations would apply only to newly discovered errors and that it would not apply to this Duluth situation. I'm left with puzzled as to just what general law para believes would apply to this situation if this special law is not passed. Is it the current contribution errors provision? Is it the contribution errors provision in 2009? Is it the provision before the 2009 changes? Just what is it, and what is the nature of that provision?
Ms. Vanek.
Mr. Chair, what I reported to the commission in February of 2009 was following a discussion with our board in which staff, after a lengthy exchange with the Internal Revenue Service about what is an appropriate way to make corrections when you identify that the plan document hasn't been followed, which means that they haven't reported salary properly as part of that. What is a correct way to make those? What is their recommended way to make those corrections? And the IRS said to us that they would typically advise a private plan to make a correction for the fiscal year in which the error was discovered and the two previous years, the two previous plan years. So we recommended to the Board of Trustees that we modify our statute, because our statute before the 2009 general legislation said if there is salary reported in error, there is no statute of limitations. You go back to as far as you can collect the data to make the correction, which is why in Duluth's case, the city provided us with information back to 1997. And so our statute said we correct that salary and refund those contributions in error all the way back. We came in with a general change to our statute to impose a three-year statute of limitation and asked the board if they wanted to apply that to errors we were currently working on that we had discovered, or if they wanted to apply it prospectively, and the decision was to apply it prospectively. Thereafter, we spoke with the entities that we were dealing with, Western Lake Superior, Bacchus, Virginia, Duluth, and they indicated that they'd like the option. They'd like to have the opportunity under local authority to choose whether or not it's the full refund and correcting all overpaid benefits, or they apply the new statute of limitations, which is why we came forward and requested these special provisions. If, in fact, this doesn't go forward, if the board supports the staff's decision that this wasn't salary and it goes to the courts and that is validated, which we expect it will be appealed, then the general law that existed pre-2009 would apply. So we would have to refund all member contributions reported in error, all employer contributions reported in error, and adjust 465 benefit recipients' payments, and collect, which we have already adjusted their payments to reduce a continuing overpayment, but then we'd have to impose on them repayment of the overpaid amounts we've identified. That's the pre-2009, pre-statute of limitation provision that existed when we discovered these errors.
Mr. Burke, did you wish to?
On page 3 of the bill, starting on line 7, is the subdivision 5, treatment of invalid salary amounts. And in that language, it appears that you are, in fact, giving Duluth and the Duluth Airports Authority the discretion to decide how far PARA will go back. If these local entities want you to go back no more than 3 years by a resolution, they can state that, and that's as far back as you would go. Otherwise, I assume you would go back 10, 11 years.
Ms. Vanek?
Mr. Chair, Subdivision 5 was intended to repeat the option for the three-year statute of limitation. The language says, on starting on 3.8, may elect to limit the period of adjustment for amounts, et cetera, to apply to the fiscal year in which the error was reported to and the salary determined to be invalid by PERA and the immediate two preceding fiscal years. So that language is intended to give them an option to use the three-year statute of limitation. The other language is a different solution we offer to them that basically says those who... the benefits are adjusted. Those who received overpayments do not have to repay them because the employer is going to give up getting their refund back to cover the cost of the overpayments, so PARA is made whole. So there are two options in this bill, and they are options. The city picks one or the other. through a local approval clause, through a resolution by the City Council that is then transmitted to the Office of the Secretary of State, and 30 days thereafter, we are required to issue, to take care of whatever the solution is and process that. And that's what the intent is.
Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chair and members, so what is the financial implications for PARA of providing these options? Are you made whole in both cases?
Ms. Vanek?
And if so, where is the language to do that?
Mr. Chair, we are made whole by the operation of the language. If they choose to reduce the payment prospectively and give up their refund, the city chooses to give up their contribution refund to cover the overpaid benefits we've already paid, we're made whole that way. If they choose to limit it to the 3-year statute of limitations, those people made contributions on that salary as if it were salary, and they get to keep those benefits. It's just those within the limitation then that will have their benefits adjusted and will have to repay any overpayment for that shorter period of time. So there's could be some kind of impact on the fund, but the solution where the employer forgoes the refund includes language that says if their refund, it's supposed to include language that says if their refund, it says it at the top of page 3, the balance of the overpaid benefits is the obligation of the city. So if the refund we calculate they would be entitled to as overpaid employer contributions doesn't cover the overpaid benefits that we calculate, the city's going to pay to us the balance of that. But if we limit it to the 3-year statute of limitations, contributions came in on that money as if it was valid salary, and the people that fall within the limitation period, they get, you know, we adjust their benefit and we refund the erroneous contributions. So there would be somewhat of a hit to the plan, but nothing significant that I can think of.
Mr. Berg.
I have no further comments.
Okay. Further questions from the commission?
Mr. Chair, if
Ms.
I may comment, because I'm staff named in this legal proceeding with the administrative law judge, I have no clue what our board's going to do tomorrow because I have been, you know, I've had to maintain my distance for objectivity. So if the board comes in with some modification to this, I will notify Representative Murphy right away. Our meeting is tomorrow morning. But I can't tell you what it could be. This is what they supported 2 years ago for the city to use as a correction if they deem that the staff was right, that this shouldn't have been reported as salary. But the board, under the administrative law judge proceeding, can accept what the law judge has said, reject it, or modify it. So until tomorrow's meeting with the Board of Trustees, I really don't have a clue on what they may be recommending. So I'll report back as soon as I know.
Okay, so we would need to know that before we finally pass out any bill here. So, okay. Thank you for disclosing that. Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chairman, members, Ms. Vanek indicated to me earlier that the 2A amendment is not needed because these other employing units have been already taken care of and resolved. Do you want the 1A amendment to? Does
Mr.
that
Chair,
give you a little more teeth?
Mr. Chair,
Mr.
I would prefer not. It's a bigger policy issue that I think we have to discuss, but I also can share with you that if this all unfolds so that the retirees end up having to repay their overpaid benefits, we have a procedure in place that follows the IRS provision that says if it's a significant overpayment, instead of us collecting it within a 5-year period or 25% reduction and recover it in less than 5 years, we can calculate the overpayment, assess our assumed rate of return over the life expectancy of the individual, And then when we get to that amount, we divide that by the remaining period that we're going to be paying the benefit, and we reduce the benefit by that amount. So we already have a procedure in place that if we extend the overpayment period for longer than 5 years, we can apply interest under the IRS direction that we received when we investigated all of this. So there is a way to get interest if it's an extended repayment process. So we don't believe we need this at this time.
Further question?
Mr. Chair, I have not been notified of anyone that came to talk about this bill, but I've received enough written communications from people that could we ask if there's anyone here that wishes to testify?
Yeah, you bet. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to be heard on this provision, this bill?
Mr. Chair.
Doesn't appear like anyone does.
Good, thank you. And then they understand. I'm hopeful that the people that have communicated with me understand that this is just reinstatement of the options that were presented before, who's now it has been expired, and so we're just restating it. It's an options that I am not saying one thing is better than another. It's just putting it out there like it was before.
Okay, Representative Murphy renews her motion that House File 1668 be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Representative Murphy and Ms. Vanek. Representative Morrow. Senator Pogamon.
Just while they're coming up, I wanted to... your conference committee is working on downsizing state government and perhaps an early retirement for state employees. And I just
yes.
wanted to point out to you, I think in the Senate bill, it was page 36, Article 3, Section 35, page 36.
Okay.
You might want to look at a ward bill, that House File 1516 that was introduced. That may be something that is a little more... we have experience with that. Apparently, we had about 1,000 employees retire under that and saved us $40 or $50 million, maybe.
Gotcha.
So I just offer that to you. I have not talked to the administration. I don't know if they prefer that approach.
Okay.
You might just want to...
So House File again?
It's House File 1516, which appears to be what we had in place before.
Okay.
I didn't double-check it, but it might be something that is a little...
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. We're hopefully going to close up the bill tomorrow. So,
but I haven't talked to the administrator. I haven't talked to anybody. I just happen to notice that.
So. Well, I appreciate that, and we'll check into that. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Packard.
Chairman, speaking of tomorrow, did I get a notice that our meeting tomorrow was canceled?
Yes. We. we're trying to wrap up Major Bill. A number of major bills, mm-hmm. and we had a couple of folks who would have liked to have also been heard, and I've told those who were interested that we just didn't have time to finish it this year, but I told them we'd be happy to take their bill under consideration next session.
Okay. So our meeting next week is also canceled then?
Well, we need to talk about that in a moment here. If we want to take action tonight on the omnibus bill, we could avoid a meeting Monday if we want to still have a final session on Monday. We can do that as well. Let's talk about that when we finish our agenda here. Welcome,
thank you, Mr.
Representative Morrow and Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I believe last week where we left things was that this bill was laid on the table, and in order
Correct.
To discuss and amend it. I don't know first procedurally whether you have to take it from the table.
Yes, Representative Morrow, yes. We would need to take the bill from the table. Representative Murphy, you moved to table, so do you want to move?
I so move, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Murphy has moved that we take this matter off the table for consideration. All in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. The matter is now before us. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Murphy. Members, last week we were talking about MnDOT worker Mike Strzok, who died in our district, and there were some very important questions raised by the commission, and we're grateful for that. And in light of those questions, you see a 7A amendment in front of you. What the 7A amendment does is ask MSRS to calculate the full actuarial value of the projected additional benefit, survivor benefit, from Mrs. Strzok. That would be calculated 30 days after passage of the bill. The MSRS executive director would certify the payment amount to MnDOT. MnDOT would then pay the actuarial value payment within 30 days of certification into the for deposit into the General State Employees Retirement Fund. After the meeting, Mr. Chair, that we held last week, I talked with MnDOT. I asked MnDOT whether MnDOT would be in a position to pay the actuarial value. MnDOT has said yes, it would, and there is a representative from MnDOT here if the commission has any questions.
Okay. Senator Sharon, did you wish to add?
No, although I will say that there will be another, we'll need, besides this amendment, we'll need another action a little later. We just noticed this evening that we did not correct the naming of the bill, and there will have to be an oral amendment to exclude language related to dependent children.
This is in the title of the bill.
This okay. is in the title, yes.
Mr. Bergstrom, would you come forward and indicate MSRS view about this?
Mr. Chair, my name is Dave Bergstrom, the director of the Minnesota State Retirement System. It holds us harmless. I think it's a very workable solution, and we're comfortable with the bill.
Okay. And the person from MnDOT?
Yeah. Mr. Bergstrom? Mr. Chair?
Yeah. Representative Murphy has a question for Mr. Bergstrom. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Bergstrom, would then this still be a retirement benefit?
Mr. Bergstrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, it would be a survivor benefit to the spouse. And it would be payable somewhere when the Ms. Strzok reaches 57, 58, depending on when, how long her kids are in school, et cetera.
And Mr.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Bergstrom, Mr. Peterson from DOT is here now. And so DOT would be paying right now, and then that money would be invested, and then so it would be all ready to be fully funded at the time that 57 comes.
Mr. Bergstrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, exactly correct.
And so there's no, Mr. Chair.
Then Representative Murphy.
Then there's no, the MSRS would not be responsible for the funding because DOT had paid in.
Mr. Bergstrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, that is correct.
Good.
So Representative Kahn.
Well, I know we're always careful about any pension things because of the precedents for the future, and of course what happens, and this is fine for MSRS, but and I know we're not looking at a lot of cases. It was apparently 49 over the last 50 years, so I guess it's an average of what would DOTs, or what would the, and I guess this might happen in other departments, I guess there's not too many where there are people, you know, it might happen in DNR that you have this kind of tragedy occurring too. I don't think we have it in the legislature too much. But the, you know, what would be the thought of what would happen in the future?
Would the department always bring it forward? Would it depend on a legislator bringing it forward for a constituent? Would it depend on the governor saying something to do it? Does anyone have any thoughts about what this would apply for the future?
Mr. Bergstrom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, one thought I had is one thing very unique about this is the age of the person. You know, if this person was older and had 20 years of service, the survivor benefits we pay would be sufficient. And in this case, it just wasn't because of the length of service. So I think you're talking about a fairly small group. And then at the last hearing, I think the bill was very narrowly crafted, if I remember right. Senator Pogemiller commented on that. So they drew it to a very tight group where there would be very few cases where this would ever really happen.
Yeah. Representative Kahn.
I forgot that. Where's the language in the bill that? Where's the language in the bill that that tightens it to
it
the?
Date. I think it has
a
date.
We have the usual language that we have, which specifically that so this bill only applies to this person. So I'm not worried that there's a massive set of people coming in, but I'm just thinking about what in the future. You know, when this happens, how would one initiate this kind of event to, what's the thought of how this kind of event would be initiated?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, I think at the last meeting you were talking about, language, and it's in the bill, about an emergency responder and in the case of public safety. So it's not, somebody who... a DOT worker who was tragically killed on the side of the road. It's one that's engaged in some part of emergency response to flooding. So it was fairly narrowly crafted.
Mr. Chair, if I might.
Representative Morrow.
Mr. Chair, just responding in part to Representative Kahn on the 49 or so construction workers, I was asking Mr. Peterson, and he certainly can elaborate, those weren't MnDOT workers. Those were, we think, construction workers doing road projects. They may have been with private contractors, for example. They weren't MnDOT necessarily. And again, if Mr. Peterson chooses, he could expand on that.
Mr. Peterson, welcome. Please identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Scott Peterson from MnDOT. And just to that last question, Representative Kahn, I've been working for the department for about 16 years now, and this is the only employee, to my recollection, that's been killed on the job in this matter.
Okay. Okay. It was just a question that didn't really have an answer anyway. I was just putting it out on the table as a philosophy. So,
members, you have before you the proposed amendment, the 7A amendment to House File 1528. Further question, Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Peterson, for being here. What is the dollar amount in this particular case? Because last time we had a number, but I think this changes maybe.
Mr. Bergstrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, the dollar amount was $38,000.
That's still 38?
Yep.
And for you, Mr. Peterson, question I have for you, where would you take this out from your Department of Transportation? Where would this come from?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kiffmeyer, the department has a couple of appropriations for their operating budget. I think probably this would come from our operations and maintenance operating appropriation.
I think in that case it's coming up
with this. Further question?
I'd move the 7A.
Senator Pogemiller moves. We don't have actually a motion on the bill itself, so we should probably do that.
Move the bill.
Senator Pogemiller moves House File 1528, Senate File 1277. Now do you want to move the amendment?
7A.
Senator Pogemiller moves the 7A amendment. Further discussion? And that's for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Senator Sharon.
I'm not sure of the proper timing. I just want to make certain if this is the final action that I also would ask someone if we needed another amendment at this point.
Yes, so this would be the time to do it.
The time to do it, to correct the language in the naming of the bill and to eliminate on line 1.2 and at the end of the sentence, and to eliminate on line 1.3 dependent children.
I'd incorporate that in the A, 7A, as part of the 7A.
Okay, Senator Pogemiller incorporates that oral amendment in to the 7A amendment. Staff have that? Thank you for bringing that up, Senator. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you very much, and thanks for working to resolve a very difficult situation here in a way in which we're not setting precedent that could come back to haunt us later. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Members, the next bill is what we had intended to be our vehicle bill for the omnibus. And Mr. Burrick, Mr. Martin, do you wish to introduce this?
This is House File 1647, Lanning, and Senate File 1369, Rosen. The bill was intended to be more of a housekeeping bill in that it takes the actuarial assumptions as to salary increase and payroll increase that were acted upon by the Pension Commission last summer and put into place for the 2010 actuarial valuations, but for which different old assumptions still appear in statute. This is clearing out the old language, the old actuarial assumptions, and putting in the current, the 2010 actuarial assumptions for the PERA general plan, the MSRS general plan, and the TRA plan, the three plans for which there were experience studies done and acted upon by the Pension Commission in July. So the bill is not substantive in that sense. It was intended to be the good housekeeping. Ms. Vanek has reminded me that the PERA system has had an experience study done for the police and fire plan, and that if we are intent upon having the revised salary assumptions that the actuary for PERA is recommending for the PERA police and fire plan to be in place for the next evaluation, and these would be smaller salary increases and smaller assumed payroll growth assumptions, that something would need to be done, and this bill would be the appropriate vehicle. And if the commission is interested in pursuing that, I do have the amendatory language here. Is that something, Mr. Chair, you would like to have passed out?
Do you want to? Yes, let's take that.
Members, the amendment is the 4A amendment, and what it does is it repeats a lot of what's in the bill because these are tables that are set forth in statute, and what it does is does away with the PERA police and fire salary scale assumption in one table and plops it in as new column D in the other place where salary assumptions reside. The actuary for the pension, the three pension funds that had experience studies, recommended a shift in the way we do salary scale assumptions from an age-based set of assumptions, and that's the language that you see on pages 1 and 2, to a service length set of actuarial assumptions. And that's what's on page 3. And so this gets rid of was the PERA police and fire age-related salary scale assumptions and adds the new assumption for PERA police and fire as column D on page 3. Columns A, B, and C are the actuarial assumptions that were approved by the Pension Commission in the summer, A for MSRS, B for PERA, and C for TRA.
Ms. Vanek, does this accomplish what you were hoping to have happen?
Mr. Chair, members, yes. We did complete our experience analysis of the Police and Fire Fund, and it is important that we get those assumptions updated as quickly as possible. Thank you.
And this takes care of the email that you recently sent me about?
It does, Mr. Chair. I guess I would just defer to Mr. Martin that there are also demographic assumption changes, and particularly the mortality assumption change. The details of that are not shown in statute, but it is a significant change for our plan, and we need to recognize longer life expectancy so that gets included in the forecast, not the costs. And I would defer to Mr. Martin on how, if this would be the time or we want to, we could possibly wait till September when you meet to go over it more thoroughly, because then we still have an opportunity to incorporate it in the valuation if that would work better.
Mr. Martin?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Because the whole experience study has not been presented to the Pension Commission, it's not been reviewed by the Commission's retained actuary. To do it now doesn't seem to be the most appropriate timing. This is needed to be done because it is a statutory change, and there is no time later than this in which to do it. My preference would be to do it during the summer if we do meet during the summer, otherwise do it at the first opportunity in the fall.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Senator Daley.
I'm guessing that I may offer an oral amendment. Draw your attention to line 3.16, 3.17. In column A, I see it goes from 4.65 to 1.45 and 1.35 and then up to 4.25. I'm guessing those two ones should be fours. Should read 4.45 and 4.35.
Senator Daley is correct. We did catch this typographical error, and it's actually the 3A amendment that's in your packets. It would have been nice to have done that here, except that we needed to we should have done that here. This was a typo. It unfortunately was a typo in the motion that was approved by the Pension Commission back in July 2010, but it would be appropriate to have those mistaken ones, those mistaken fours that became ones, returned to fours. And Mr. Bergstrom from MSRS, the affected fund, is the one who flagged this for us first.
Thank you, Senator Daley. It's good to have an accountant looking over these things for us. Senator Rosen, did you wish to move the bill and then the amendment?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the 4A amendment.
Well, let's do the bill first and then put the amendment on.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the House File 1647.
And then amendment, 4A amendment.
And then I move the 4A amendment.
With the oral amendment?
With an oral, there's a 3A amendment that has the changes on it that Senator Daley was talking about. Or do you just want to do it?
Oh, okay. Mr. Martin, does it matter if we? You could just incorporate the oral amendment in the 4A.
Mr. Chair, my oral amendment is page 3, line 16, is column A, delete 1.45 and put it to 4.45. Page 3, line 17, delete 1.35 and change it to 4.35.
Okay, staff has that. All in favor of the 4A amendment as amended, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Mr. Martin.
The bill is amended, Mr. Chair.
Pardon me?
The bill is amended. I think you acted on.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
You acted on only the.
Yes, yes.
The amendments.
What I was going to ask is. Are we intending to use this as our vehicle for omnibus, or would we do a...
Mr. Chair, I think this would be the best vehicle since unless you want a different author to carry the omnibus bill in the House, or Senator Rosen wants a different author to carry it in the Senate. The reason for this bill is to get the right authors. The chair and vice chair is the usual custom.
About 20 years ago.
Well, we don't have another vehicle bill readily available at this point, do we? Unless we'd have to crank one out quickly here. So, Senator Rosen, are you willing to take that on?
Absolutely.
Okay, I will do the same. And I'll expect Representative Murphy to...
get an amendment for a Viking stadium on it.
We're not going to go there.
Representative Kahn, you're wearing the right colors today.
We're not going to go there.
Just checking.
Mr.
Chair.
So, Mr. Martin, how should we, what's your recommendation if we wanted now to add any or all of the bills that we've laid over? And members, I guess I would ask you if you're comfortable, we could do that tonight. If you feel we ought to stick with the original plan and have this assembled and act on it on Monday. We'll have to find a time on Monday where we can do it. Obviously, this has to go to, in the House, government operations, and the sooner we get it to them, the better. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. Chairman, not to complicate the Commission's thinking on this, but members may be aware that the Minneapolis Police and the Minneapolis Fire have been in discussions with the city of Minneapolis in the instance of the police to figure out a way to get out of court and resolve it, plus get into a consolidation situation. And Senator Dibble introduced a bill the other day that is the framework of a, with no numbers, but the framework of a voluntary consolidation of Minneapolis Police and Fire. This would be a big deal if this got pulled off. I think the only outstanding one would be Fairmont, then, as I think. And it's a fairly small group of employees. So, Mr. Chairman, if something actually was... PERA board is meeting tomorrow. Ms. Vanek is hoping to have enough information to talk to the PERA board about it, potentially. And so it's possible that something could come together in the next few days. It obviously would have to be vetted because it's serious business. So I would hope that there's the opportunity that if this can be pulled off, that there would be a possibility for a commission to meet on Monday to say this makes sense or doesn't make sense. It would be a voluntary consolidation. Basically, the city, the pension funds, and PERA would all have to agree. Otherwise, it's just too complex.
Well, Senator Pogemiller, I have been contacted by... different folks on that, and it certainly is an issue that we need to address. I'm just concerned about being able to have the kind of agreement that's going to be required to move this forward, because I'm also aware of some controversy that is still there that hasn't been resolved yet, and whether that can get resolved expeditiously or not, I don't know.
Representative Rainey.
Senator.
What I'm suggesting is that unless it is resolved, I'm not interested. It would have to be resolved. Mm-hmm. And they have been working today kind of furiously to resolve those differences.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kahn.
My suggestion is to move the full bill forward at this time. Then if this does get resolved and we are ready to put and there's a solution that's amenable to add to the bill, I would suggest we can either then come back to pension commission, pull everything all. You know, we can do it. We can call a meeting and then do it. Or the other possibility, a little bit less orthodox, but it would at least intellectually do the same thing, is that the pension commission could meet, come to an agreement, and present it to the government operations committee as an amendment, as an agreement of the pensions commission. I mean, that's a slightly different procedure than we use, but I don't think it in any way gets rid of the vetting of the pension commission, and you know, and I don't think it sets a precedent for terrible things happening in the future.
Well, I understand that could be an option here, and as of right now, we don't have an agreement. So
I would suggest that we follow your suggestion that we move ahead, and then we'll,
okay,
if something else happens, we'll figure out some way of dealing with it.
Well, that seems to me to be the prudent thing to do at this point, is just proceed as we had originally intended.
Mr. Chair?
So, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Pogermiller, just first blush, how long do you think this is going to take for an agreement to come out? I mean,
Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. Chairman, Senator and Commission members, I think they're, like, very close, and they basically have to have enough for Ms. Vanek to talk to her PERA board about tomorrow, because a threshold question is PERA willing to do this under the circumstances that the city and the pension funds are willing to do it? So I would think that the framework of an agreement is kind of there right now. I'm not in a position to say that it's been signed off by everybody, but I would think by tomorrow or the next day we would know whether it's been signed off by everybody and whether it's feasible. And then we would want the commission staff to vet it, do a memo, because we'd want to make sure this thing was done in a way that covered all the bases. There have been consolidations before. I believe they've always been voluntary. This one's just a little more complex because it's a bigger deal. And they would need some legislative authority to do some parts of it. That's why you would need a bill. There probably still is a piece of legislation that allows voluntary consolidation. I don't think they can accomplish it under that. They would need some legislative changes.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Kiffmeyer.
One of the concerns I would have on a speedy situation with that, how will you know? I mean, will the members be able to vote on it? How are you going to communicate that? Oh, I didn't mean the previous legislation, Mr. Chairman. I just meant by tomorrow.
Yeah.
When you're talking about an agreement by all parties tomorrow.
Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. Chairman, I think if the leadership of the various groups agrees, then you would draft the legislation in a way that made sure that the memberships agreed. So I don't know if that would mean you would actually have votes of the memberships, but obviously PERA board would have to vote at some point. We don't want to force them to do something that doesn't make sense for them. And whether the police and fire people would want to take it to their boards or to their membership, I don't know. That would be kind of up to them. And obviously the city council and mayor can meet at the drop of a hat if they need to. But I think we wouldn't want to do anything that was not done in a way where everybody felt that everybody's interests were protected, including the states.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Murphy.
Before you progress any further, could we go back to 1647?
Okay.
Is there anyone in the audience that has a problem with with it at all?
Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to speak relative to House File 1647, Senate File 1369?
Good. There were so many different plans mentioned in in there that I thought that maybe somebody didn't know or something. I wanted to make sure.
Good question. Members, what's your pleasure with respect to the bills that we've laid over?
If I could,
Mr. Martin.
To help the members, on a tab that's labeled Omnibus, you've got the work product of the May 5th commission meeting. If you did all of the things you looked at on May 5th as an omnibus bill, I've collected that, aggregated it into a draft omnibus bill, as it were. And there's a memo, a couple of pages of a memo, and then the actual document, which is at the moment three articles, and it contains the five bills that you looked at last time. So this gives you a sense of what bills were on the May 5th amendment or the May 5th meeting agenda, and gives you the language which engrosses any amendments. For instance, Red Wing Port Authority had some amendments. There was an amendment for the White Bear Lake bill. So that they're all incorporated in document document 11A02A. So as a starting point, this would give you an idea of what this and today's agenda gives you the idea of what was potentially to be folded into an omnibus bill if you wanted to do everything that you've looked at.
Mr. Martin, would it be possible if we were to, today's Wednesday, if we were to try to see if we could find a time for the commission to meet on Friday to get all of this in one document so we would have it in advance? I'm a little uncomfortable not having the complete document together. Would that be possible, Mr. Martin?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, yes. The only item
so
that I...
So probably what we would need to do is to lay over the bill that's before us right now, and then you would bring to us an omnibus bill with all of those provisions in it, correct?
Yes.
I don't know.
How does that sound, members?
Sounds good.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, could we have amendments?
Yeah.
Are you talking about new bills?
Well, a couple of bills didn't get on for tomorrow night that we thought. One was when Minsky left, they left me with a bill that they were hoping that would help a single person born on February 2nd, 1978, that if she has to wait another year, we'll have a substantial increase in what she has to pay to buy back. There's some firefighters that want from Biwabik and Crane Lake, and it's a permissive language that want to have additional contributions authorized. Maybe we could use those as amendments.
Well, Representative Murphy, I like being flexible, but I don't want to open any floodgates here because we do have a lot of bills on the list that we just don't have time to get to. And Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I was going to say I have one, too, for a Senate employee that missed a deadline.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm afraid of opening the floodgates on that.
I would have been remiss had I not asked my question, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, well, that's a fair question. And
Mr. Chair.
That's a fair question. But I think it's important that that we include those things that we've had a formal hearing on, and something that otherwise would have required a hearing to do that as an amendment, I think, is asking for some potential problems. So, members, if you're okay, we will then ask staff to we'll lay this bill over that's before us right now and ask staff to bring all the other material into it so that we can have one document. And then if you can give some quick thought to if you think there's a time on Friday. I know the House is not going to be in session Friday afternoon, Friday morning only. There are other things going on, but maybe there's a, I don't know what the Senate schedule is, if there's a possibility of a Friday afternoon meeting. We don't have to, it doesn't have to be very long. Senator Rosen, did you have a suggestion?
I was just looking at the calendar, but also, Mr. Chair, I guess I would like to know from Mr. Martin or Mr. Burke about the state auditor's bills and if those are crucial, if those need to be acted on this year. Senate file, or House file 1554 and 1555.
Senator Rosen, I thought that they had advised that that was not essential that
okay.
that be
just
done
need
now.
I to know that now.
Because I tried to, in working with staff, I tried to make sure we would try to accommodate anything that was really critical to get done now. So Friday afternoon, say what?
Mr. Chair, we are in session from 10:30, it looks till 3:30 or so.
So if we tried to do 4 o'clock on Friday?
Mm-hmm. Or
Senator Pogelman.
Do it in the Capitol.
Right.
We could step out.
Sure.
That would be great. We could do it actually.
Mr. Chair, I would not be able to make a 4 o'clock. I have a conference committee that's scheduled at that time.
Is there another time earlier that the senators would be willing to
30.
Quickly step out into a meeting?
Mr. Chair, how about if we just check in real quick and meet about 10:30 or 11 when they're just going through? You
we're on the floor, out. But we well, could.
When
we,
do you guys
we're supposed to be done by noon.
Why don't we just do it about
noon? No, that'd be fine.
Okay, let's shoot for noon on Friday.
We can get a room in the
and you'll get a room over at the Capitol. Okay, we will lay over the bill that's before us now for possible using that bill as an omnibus bill, and staff will have that material out to us, and when might we expect to be able to get it by the end of the day, tomorrow?
Definitely
maybe?
By the end of the day, probably the middle of the day.
Okay. Okay, with that, members, we're adjourned.
There's nothing in there.
Friday the 13th.
Some things that would be nice to do, but it won't. The world will not end. But, yeah, you have to go back and
get
the. Yeah. If there was some